So tonight I'd like to talk about coming out of the port, and this is a metaphor for the anchor that we talked about, this quality of steadiness nourished by mindfulness, stabilizing the attention to one area. So navigating from that port to going into the big ocean. Meaning by big ocean, exploring naturally different aspects of our practice, which will spontaneously unfold, arise. And even this afternoon, talking to some of you, there was a clear sense of moving beyond the port or the anchor, the harbor. I'd like to paraphrase the Buddha right now to begin the talk, and it's very clear that the teachings say that the mind is by nature unobstructed, and it is because of visiting forces that are known as hindrances or obstructions that we suffer. So it's quite clear that by nature, meaning that the nature of mind, the nature of awareness, you can say, is unobstructed. It can't be altered by anything that passes in front of it. And this is why in his quest the Buddha saw very clearly and understood the possibility, the potential as a human being for himself and also as a human being for ourselves, how we get caught in bondage. And actually his many years of teaching revolved in explaining the way we get caught and the way we liberate the mind from unsatisfactoriness, pain or suffering, sorrow, grief, lamentation. There are endless descriptions of how pain can manifest. And one of the ways he summed up his understanding is said to have been expressed in the following words. He said, "To end all suffering, one needs to develop a mind that clings," which means that attaches, "to nothing. Out of this non-clinging or non-attachment, then the truth of liberation can unfold." So everything revolves around this attitude that we have to grasp, to cling, to hold on, to attach to certain experiences. And the movement is really to release. There's a clear sense of releasing the mind from these attachments. And I think that before we come to practice, there's little or very, maybe even no idea that it's our own mind that is creating the suffering. The suffering that we are experiencing mostly comes from our way of relating to what is manifesting. And this, when I heard, came as a surprise the first time, but it's fantastic because it means that we can do something about it. We don't need to be victims of our own minds. And certainly people who come to practice progressively with time will see this unfold very experientially. So it's not just a nice idea. There's an experience of the process of liberation, which comes over time. So when we come, we don't realize how much pain is caused when we are dragged by the amount of thoughts, the painful thoughts, very often. And we don't realize that sometimes these thoughts make us do actions that we don't necessarily choose. So we're governed by this cycle, usually loops that create often more and more suffering, not only for ourselves, but suffering for other people. And that's how the bondage then becomes really something of the kind where we begin to question. And the questioning makes us come here. Not enough to question or not enough to just read a book, but we say, okay, I want to put this into practice and experience. What does it mean to move in the direction which is opposite to this creativity of suffering? And we begin to discover here an inner life of sensations, of thoughts, of emotions that are manifesting at times very strongly, no doubt. And it's part of the dynamic, because this realization comes from coming close, very close actually, intimately connected to the process of the mind and the body working together. And this mind and body process is very dynamic. We begin to meet the resistances. We begin to meet the torments of the mind or the obscurations. And we don't need to choose. They just come up due to the circumstances. This is what we are probably working with. And there's no doubt that for all of us, one of the torments of the mind that I will be speaking about has surfaced since yesterday. So this is not some obscure thing which I'm talking about. Very real, very concrete. And actually, even if we have had years of practice and we feel that we are an experienced meditator, when there's something which is uncomfortable and there's a sense that we're having a problem to solve, there's probably the presence of one of these torments of the mind that is in the mind. And these can be very subtle. Sometimes they can have a gross form, and sometimes they can have a very subtle form. And so it requires some clarity, some clear mindfulness to be able to notice when they're present. So what are they? There are many, of course. There are plenty of them. I could describe a whole dictionary of these torments of mind. But in the Buddhist teachings, they're categorized with five kinds, you can say, five big categories. And, of course, there are many subdivisions of these five categories. And they're named thus. The first is sense desire, or what is called the wanting mind. The second is aversion, or rejection, you can say. Everything that is happening, which is exactly the opposite of wanting, it's the not wanting mind. The third is dullness of mind, sluggishness, sleepiness, laziness. The fourth is the opposite state, which is restlessness, agitation, and this can be of body or mind, worry, preoccupation that creates restlessness. And the fifth is doubt. Not the questioning, but the skeptical doubt. Doubt that is born out of confusion, where we don't know where to stand. We don't know this, we don't know that. And it's very uncomfortable, actually, if we have doubt. And this is what governs in our mind. So they're called, at times, if you've heard the teachings before, this teaching is called the Five Hindrances, which in Pali is called the kilesa and translated as the defilements. But it's important to understand that they are hindrances if we do concentration practice, meaning that when we do concentration practice, we want to stay really focused on one object, and therefore everything else needs to be out of the way, right? So we push them away. If we do vipassana practice like we're doing here, they're not at all hindrances. They need to be recognized for what they are, because they can be stepping stones, meaning skillful means, in relationship to the process of liberation. They're fuel for awakening. Awakening our minds, our hearts, from confusion, from ignorance. So it's really important to make that distinction. Because when they arrive, these states, the natural reaction is, this is a problem, let me get rid of it. And we don't need to. It's really important to understand that this is going the wrong way. And I'll explain this, of course, much more this evening. But since they're visitors, they're not here permanently, which means that they can color the mind, they can color the aspect of the nature of mind for some time, but then they go. If we were sleepy this morning, probably this afternoon at one point or another, we weren't sleepy anymore, something else came up, right? So we can really see that they're not permanent in any way. And the fact that they're visitors means that we don't own them. There are absolutely no ways that we may think that we are the owners of these torments of mind. It feels like that. And that's why there's so much pressure, pressure, confusion, and unsatisfactoriness when they're in the mind. And the whole process is to see that we don't own them, that we're really not the victims of these mind states, of these torments of the mind. So in fact, when seen like that and having this perspective, and when I'm talking about this perspective is to really have this in mind. Now, reflecting on this, meaning using our thinking mind to know that this is so, we can then help us or ourselves to deepen our understanding in their presence. And that's a whole other perspective of work. It's really giving ourselves a fantastic possibility of integrating every single aspect that manifests in our life. And that's exactly what is happening. So in some teachings, they're compared to the clouds in the sky, meaning that the clouds come and they pass, they come and they go, right? If there's a lot of wind, they'll go very fast. But the nature of the sky is not affected by the clouds, right? The nature of the sky is generally blue. So this is exactly the same thing. Sadness appears, sadness goes. Anger appears, anger goes. Boredom appears, boredom goes. Sleepiness, greed, aversion, frustration, irritation. Where is the mind state that you had this morning when you woke up? It's gone. You probably had 1,000 since this morning when you woke up, didn't you? Plenty of mind states. Pleasant ones, unpleasant ones, horrible ones. Coming and going. Amazing. An extraordinary dynamic force. Now those that we don't like, we have the tendency to think that they're sticking here forever. There's visitors that we would like to see leave, but they don't leave and they tend to stay and take themselves for their home. Why? Because we want to do something about them. And that's exactly how we cause our suffering. We don't simply allow them to be seen for what they are and let them pass. And a lot of the process of the meditation is happening at that level. So how to relate to them in a way which is different from the one that we know? Well, of course, the first answer is using mindfulness. This quality of mindfulness is very specific. The quality of pure mindfulness doesn't have any preference for or against. Mindfulness really has this capacity, just like a mirror, to reflect what appears in front of the mirror, and when the thing is gone, the mirror is not affected by what is presenting itself in front of it. With the mind, it's the same thing. Mindfulness reflects what is present, and when it's gone, there's absolutely no taint. So this quality of mindfulness is quite pure. It's not tainted in any way by anything else than just seeing and letting go. And this is the quality that we're cultivating, no doubt. What is special here is that there's a wonderful quality of openness and receptivity, which we're not used to. So I think that the first idea is often we think that we have done something wrong when these states are present, and we blame ourselves for it. And I think it's important to realize that there's absolutely no mistake from our part. Blaming or having a sense of guilt is only reinforcing the sense of ownership. The me and my story, the me in it, which is becoming the victim of that sleepiness or that mind state, whether it's anger, whether it's frustration, irritation. And that, in the teachings, is called confusion or ignorance. Seeing ignorance doesn't mean not knowing. It means knowing wrongly. Having a misperception born out of a misunderstanding. So there's a real sense where we move in the direction of a clarification in relationship to how we stand in the field of exploration in relationship to what is happening. Extremely challenging field to work with, but extremely interesting. Because it is liberating. Every time there's a pure seeing in relationship to mindfulness, this is a moment of freedom from fabricating more suffering. Every moment, and you've had plenty today. And it's fantastic because we don't recognize those moments. We stay so stuck in misperceiving and looking at what is missing, what's wrong, what's not okay, that we really don't appreciate the moments when this quality of mindfulness just reflects what is, and there's no clinging, there's no attachment, and there's no rejection. The experience, the non-conceptual understanding is happening within you. And it needs to happen a few times, and more than a few times, so that suddenly we have a sense that, yes, we have an insight, an understanding. But it is happening at that level. And maybe we haven't completely understood it so that intellectually it affects completely our way of being. But no doubt there's a direction with which we go towards, which helps us go in the direction of liberation rather than in the direction of creating more suffering. And this is the whole purpose of our being here. We're more in a lab than anywhere else. And in the lab, we're exploring our own mind and heart and see how the mind works and what we can understand, and how, of course, there's an ability to free ourselves. The Dalai Lama has this wonderful line that says, "Nothing, absolutely nothing, is not worthy of our attention." Remember that so often the difficulties that we encounter in our practice are the places that most wake us up. And of course, the path is about waking up, even though we want to go asleep because we don't want to feel most often what is unpleasant. There's no doubt we're going to circle and we're going to go and take long ways instead of shortcuts, but the path, in whatever way you want to take it, does wake us up. So the first is this torment called sense desire. And as I said, this is the wanting mind. It's the mind that grasps, right? You know this word, grasping? It's the mind that grasps at what is pleasant. Okay, we have pleasant experiences, thank goodness we do. And so there are pleasant sounds, pleasant sights, pleasant tastes, pleasant smells. Actually, I'm just going to make a parenthesis here. What the Buddha said in the sutta that is called the all that we can experience in relationship to us being a human being, all that we can experience in actuality, experientially, is born out of five physical senses, and a sixth experience, which is a sense door also, the mind. And in the teachings, mind is a sense door. So all that we experience is tasting, touching, smelling, hearing, seeing. Five senses, right? And the fifth, the mind. What do we do with the mind? Well, thinking, and probably a lot, mind, heart, is the same word, okay? So mind and heart, citta, is feeling emotions and having thoughts or images that belongs to that realm of the sixth sense door. That is all that we experience. It's not very complicated, it's much more complex, but this is what is usually happening. So in relationship to the wanting mind, we can experience pleasant sights, pleasant sounds, pleasant smells, pleasant tastes, pleasant tactile sensations, pleasant thoughts, pleasant emotions, pleasant mental images, and this is it. And there's no doubt that the Buddha said there is a gratification to feeling the pleasant. He did not say, do not feel the pleasant, or run away from the pleasant because it's not good. No, there is a gratification. Yet, when the pleasant is shifting for one reason or another because the conditions change, don't grasp. The grasping at the pleasant when it's no longer available is no longer pleasant. It's painful, right? And we do this, not realizing that wanting to get back or being attached to holding on to what is pleasant hurts. And we can really sense that it hurts. And yet it's going to take quite a number of cycles to really not grasp, to really understand that truth so deeply that we don't have that movement. Why is it that it's taking so much of our energy to understand this? Only because of habit. It's the habit, and especially because we don't live with the presence of mindfulness, we usually live at the surface of things, we don't even notice that we're bound. We don't notice that we have a moment of pleasant, and when that experience is gone, we do everything to recreate that experience. Whether it's a meditative experience that has been wonderful, whether it's a pleasant sense desire, it can happen at any level that you're caught. And we can get caught in so many ways. And so he called this pain. Suffering, sorrow. But the moment that there is mindfulness, pure mindfulness, there isn't this grasping. The force of grasping is not present. We allow the experience to be, it's felt, it's pleasant, it's wonderful, and it's gone. And we don't need to control then our life so much around that thing or that person or that meditative experience to be happy in our lives. To be truly happy. To be truly, not only happy, but at peace. Really at peace. So this is what we do here. We go through these cycles and really get lost in them, so lost in them, to see how we get lost and how we are able to be mindful again and see the process of liberation. And we do this over and over and over again. It's not done once, but there's no doubt that with time, there's more mindfulness, more steadiness, less tendency to fall back into the extremes. It requires practice. So with sense desire, the mind is very seduced. The force of seduction is so strong that we need to see. We really need to feel that force of seduction. We get lost in the seduction mode, even when it's no longer present. It's how can I get back, whatever it is. And in fact, I think that this mode is happening because of a sense of feeling fragmented. There's a real sense of being at a distance from this wonderful completeness that we so dearly wish to experience. But the fragmentation exactly comes from that place where we're not complete in ourselves, so we look outwardly for something which will give us this sense of completion. But born out of a neediness, it can never satisfy us to this point that we will feel complete because of the impermanence. So here again, there's a real misunderstanding. And it doesn't mean that we do not need things or people. There's no doubt. We all feel the need for love or relationship, but not born out of the sense of completeness. Not born out of a sense of lack of something in me which is missing. Then, of course, we have greater choice. We're not so dependent upon having whatever it is that we have chosen. So very clearly, after some time, we don't run so much after the objects, but the point is to see the wanting mind or the desire itself. And this is what we are going to be meeting in our own practice. We are going to be able to notice the force of desire itself. This wanting, this pulling, this pushing, this attraction, this seduction. And we'll see this rather than the cup of tea or the nice sun that we haven't had today. I'm taking very simple examples here that may happen on retreat, or the nice pleasant sitting that we might not have had today. So rather than looking for the thing, which is then going to be replaced by another thing and then another thing, and always looking for something which is going to be doing it and it never does it, we begin to see, okay, how many things am I going to need to be able to finally see that it's the desire itself that I need to be present for and mindful with. And this is exactly where there's a turning point. And the process of liberation begins, being mindful of the wanting mind itself. So there's need for interest here, not force or will. The force or the will will only fuel the force and will of desire, of craving. And this type of desire is born in craving. It has nothing to do with the desire, which is completely healthy, and the same word is used in English, which is the desire linked to an aspiration. Right? There are different types of desire. This desire that I'm talking about, which is craving, wanting, 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 and we can see in this world, you know, there's no end to it. How much do we need, you know, to be happy? And we can see we're really in a realm where it's endless. What do we invent thinking, oh, this is going to make us happy? So this is desire is born out of craving, right? Like hungry ghosts. There's another type of desire, which is healthy desire, born out of aspiration, okay? Which is the aspiration, the wish maybe to alleviate suffering in the world or to help a friend because they're in sorrow. You see, it has absolutely not the same root. So there's an aspiration, and that kind of desire is rooted in wisdom and not at all in confusion or ignorance. In Pali, the two words are completely different. Here in English, we use the same word, so this is why I'm specifying that it's not all desires. If we're here, there's no doubt a sense of aspiration or wish or desire to find the truth or whatever you are here for, which is not born, at least not the motivation, born out of more, more, more. Okay? Now, no doubt that on our path we're going to be meeting this force of more, more, more of the pleasant. And so this brings me to speak about the other aspect, which is the second torment of the mind, which is aversion. And aversion is exactly the same force rooted in craving, but with an opposite expression. It's the pulling away, the rejection, and the maintaining at a distance in relationship to what is unpleasant. And it makes sense. We want so much more of the pleasant, and of course, we don't want any of the unpleasant. Be it a difficult mind state, be it a bodily sensation which is painful, be it a relationship which is difficult. Whatever it is that is unpleasant, we do not want to meet. Therefore, aversion is present. And that is a force which naturally is going to manifest as don't want. It's the no, no, no in the mind. And you've probably had this today. no doubt. So when this happens, and in relationship to something simple as a bodily sensation, we're going to try to fix it. We're going to try to do something about it to make it acceptable, to make it maybe less painful. There's a sense of manipulation, a sense of doing, which is naturally coming in because we don't want to be approached with this sense of aversion or unpleasantness. And yet we get entangled. And in the same way that we will be mindful of the wanting mind or the sense desire, we can be mindful of the aversion or the rejection. Just meeting a little more the unpleasant, going in the direction of allowing. And here again, the mindfulness is very clear. The mindfulness doesn't have any preference. There's absolutely no sense of value. This is good, this is not good, this is bad. It doesn't have any value judgment. So mindfulness will show. Be in the presence of the unpleasant as long as it is there, and then maybe express something else. So how do we get entangled, and how do we keep ourselves in suffering? By rejecting. We cling to the pleasant and we reject the unpleasant. This is the way that we create our suffering. And so this is very clear. Tenzin Palmo has a great line. She says, "It is one of the great lies propagated by our culture that getting more and more physical and material prosperity will lead to greater and greater and greater happiness." This simply is not true. She says, "I have seen it. Genuine happiness lies in not wanting. Endless wanting is such a burden to the mind. If we really wish to be happy and create happiness for those around us, our task is to clean, to aerate, and to order our minds." So it's great, because this is exactly what we're offered to do here. And I'm sure we all wish to be happy. It's no doubt a proposal that is going against the grain, against the current of our normal way of behaving in life. No doubt. And so we may have doubts, and especially if we haven't practiced before. If we are beginner, doesn't make much sense. But we're here to look. You know, we're here to have a sense of, I hope, enough openness to be able to explore with a mind which is investigative and wishing to look. And then at the end of the week, you can make, you know, maybe a certain assumption or integration, which is a real questioning, but not while you are in the process. So the suffering comes from holding on or pushing away. It's very simple. And we'll see this over and over again. So it's simple to say, it's simple to explain. It's not so simple when we're in the midst of our exploration. And this is why there's a need for guidance, there's a need for giving a little bit more instruction. But really, the mindfulness has different aspects to it. Mindfulness means recognizing. So we don't stay only with the anchor. We really begin to open the field of, what is my attitude? what is the relationship that I'm having to this experience that is presented to me? What is my relationship to this body ache, or the sleepiness, or the anger? How am I being with it? And this is exactly where the freedom or the bondage lies. It's not in the experiences themselves. It's in me. How am I relating to this? Am I just simply allowing it to be open, which mindfulness does? Mindfulness recognizes, mindfulness allows, stays interested, and doesn't identify. These are the four qualities that are linked to any moment of mindfulness. Mindfulness recognizes, mindfulness allows, meaning opens to, is willing. There's a real great flexibility and willingness to meet. I'm repeating because someone is writing and would like some. Is it true? Yeah? You're writing? So, recognition, allowing, and the third is sustained interest, and the fourth is not identifying. Meaning not taking it personally. That's the best way I can put it tonight. This is not a personal path, in a way. It's a mind and body process, and when mindfulness is present, we begin to see this extraordinary flow of continuous sensations and thoughts and emotions and sights and sounds and endless until we die. There's an endless flow of life, but it's a life process. And the me in there, the I, to whom it is happening, is a construction. And this is what he meant, the Buddha, by no ownership. And it's fantastic because it's because we think, we believe that it's mine, my anger, my sadness, my sleepiness, that we hurt, that there's pain. And how is this process happening that we have a sense that it's so me? And you can see, my goodness, it feels like really it's mine. It's because of the grasping, because of the force of grasping and rejecting. It's only because of that. The mindfulness allows for it to be a visitor in the mind, in the heart, in the body. Comes and goes, comes and goes, comes and goes. Wanting to do something? Then you could feel the force of me is blown up. It becomes real and it becomes very solid and very sticky. So as I really like the way that Achan Sumedho says, when something is really, you know, catching you, says, oh, sadness feels like this. Anger feels like this. What does it feel like? What's the feeling tone? What's the texture? What's the sensation? Rather than, I'm feeling so sad. And you can notice in the mind, really. Take a moment and just notice the difference between I'm feeling so sad. I know for myself when I'm just like, you know, having the sentence, the weight, it's like, I'm feeling so sad, or I'm feeling so angry. And anger feels like this. Or sadness feels like this. If I say sadness feels like this, there's probably more availability to stay in relationship rather than pull out. So this process is extraordinary. I mean, there's no doubt that there's a fantastic exploration, because every moment there is no grasping one way or another. There is freedom. There is that sense of completeness. There is nothing missing in that moment. So I really encourage you to also acknowledge those moments when there is peace. There is nothing to fix, nothing to improve, nothing to transform. Appreciating that. The two next ones are easier in a way to deal with. One is, of course, the sleepiness and the sluggishness, the dullness in the mind. And the other is too much energy, which is agitation, restlessness. So in a way, it has to do with energy. Low energy or too high energy. Whether it's in the mind, whether it's in the body. And usually one fuels the other. There's clearly a sense where we feel when sleepiness is in the body, then of course dullness comes in the mind, dullness is in the mind, and we feel a weight in the body. So there's a sense of them kind of appearing together. Now the way to work with this type of manifestation is very clearly different at different times. There's not one recipe. And I've seen for myself so many hours of meditation where there's been the visitors of sleepiness or agitation, both. One, you feel very low and there's a lot of disinterest, even boredom. And boredom can create low energy. There's a sense of not wanting to be here, really. And of course, some of these energies, these two, are fueled, right, by the two first ones. When there's low energy and there's sleepiness and there's boredom, I don't want to be here. So you can really notice the presence of aversion. And here again, what is my attitude? What is my relationship in relationship to sleepiness? I don't want to feel this. So it comes back to the aversion. And usually these two different ones relate for us to the two first ones. So always fueled by aversion or wanting, desire. Desire for something else than the sleepiness, or aversion about the sleepiness. So in the relationship, again, you come and you notice what is it that is present. Sleepiness in itself, or dullness of mind, or agitation, or restlessness, is not a problem. It's absolutely not a problem. It begins to be a problem when we make one out of it. And how do we make one out of it? By having aversion to it. Having the aversion to sleepiness, then that is a problem. Why? Because it's the aversion that hurts. So you really see that it's all about attachment, clinging, non-attachment, non-clinging. Whatever the arising experience. And of course, you hear me now. You get these words and you probably, you know, think them through. But for you to experience something which will be called or can be called a transformation, you'll have to experience this. And that's exactly what the Buddha says, that don't believe what I say. I may say very wise words, But don't believe them. It's not by believing them that your transformation is going to happen. And unfortunately, there are many things that can be done by other people for us today, but this cannot be done by other people. We need to spend our time in the practice, in this very way, the way that the Buddha practiced actually 2,600 years ago, to experience. So it's not to believe, not to be thought about. It's to be put into one's experience. And that's what we call the meditation. Process it through so that it's a living experience. Living experience meaning full, authentic, actual experience, direct experience, not just a nice thought. So no doubt that we can have plenty of ways that we can run away from sleepiness. We can stand up, we can wash our face with water, we can go and have a brisk walk, or we can walk faster. All of these may be skillful means. But be careful to not use the skillful means born out of aversion to get rid of. Skillful means just to allow ourselves to accompany ourselves and find the ways that we can keep on being on the path. And so this requires quite some, I would say, honesty. Yeah, honesty. To be aware, from which place am I doing this? From which place am I taking this decision? Not come in the hall because I think I need more sleep. Yeah, okay. But question your decision. Where is it coming from? Is it coming from a place of disinterest, not wanting, boredom? Knowing that the least we're going to be using our energy, the lower the energy. There's one line from one of my main teachers, Sayadaw Upantita, with whom I practiced a long time in Burma, who said, we believe wrongly. We believe that if we rest, we're going to have more energy. It's energy that fuels energy. And I've really seen this for myself. It's amazing. Every time I've said, oh, forget to sit, go sleep, I'll be better. No. No. No, it's absolutely the reverse. So actually we have a sense where we are cultivating this quality of awareness, which is very subtle and gentle. We've said often more and more, caring attention, yet continuous. There's one secret: if you give yourself to the practice in a continuous way, it's going to support you much more than if you give yourself continually some breaks. And that's how we learn to work in relationship to these two types of torments of mind, which are sleepiness and agitation. So agitation is not a problem here again. If there's restlessness, okay, there's, what is restlessness? Restlessness in the body, but there's also a lot of restlessness in the mind. It's a lot of thoughts. We can't stop thinking. Something is on our mind, and we can't settle. So thoughts are not a problem. Thoughts in themselves are just part of the flow of experiences. Being aware of the thought may reveal where the agitation or restlessness comes from. And of course, we'll talk more about working with thoughts in the next few days. There's no doubt there's a huge field of exploration in relationship to bringing in this aspect in the practice. The last one is doubt. this skeptical doubt, which is said to be the most difficult to work with. Why is it the most difficult? Because we are in confusion when doubt is present. We don't know. It's the not knowing mind. And because it's a fog, and we're often not clear when there's fog, it's much less clear, and in that way, much less accessible to see and to notice, to have mindfulness be clear about, oh, this is doubt. And especially the doubt that masquerades as wisdom. These thoughts, because doubt is thought, these thoughts that say, oh, exactly what I said before, I better not come into the hall. Oh, I wonder if I should really do the next sit. And there's doubt, recognize the doubt. Doubt freezes us. It really paralyzes us. It's the biggest resistance to moving on the path. So it's very important to recognize. I don't know this, I don't know that. Should I do this? Should I do that? What should I do now? Just really emphasize again and again this clarity. So you can see that we all work with them in relationship to noticing what is fueling them, what is feeding. And usually if there's doubt, there's something behind it or beneath it, which may be called an emotional resistance. When doubt is surfacing and it's at the surface, there can be something which is of the nature of an emotion which is maybe not so easy to contact, and therefore we stay at a distance, and doubt keeps us at a distance. And naturally I will be speaking about difficult emotions, but the idea about doubt is that it's tricky. And we're not here talking about an open question. It really is underneath the sense of insecurity. The real sense of feeling insecure. And so it's an open door to feel maybe the insecurity. And I know that for me, when I've had doubt in my practice, and this is one visitor that I know very well, and I just, you know, had enough courage to keep on looking, there was fear underneath, quite a lot of fear. And then, of course, I needed to work with the fear, which was what it was. But it was covered over with doubt. And I'm not saying, you know, this is the case for you, but it's very important that we kind of, okay, there's something usually underneath the doubt that masquerades. And so doubt appears in many ways. It can be doubt about the type of practice that we're doing here, doubt about the teachers, doubt about our own capacity to be able to do the practice, self-doubt. This is very common. So there are many doubts. And to have already a sense of which one it is will bring up clarity. It will help us to know, oh, okay, this is what is happening. Because we're only wanting to see clearly what is present. The practice is never asking to go dig and do something else than meet what is present. Be with what is. That's it. That's another line for Usairo Pandita. Don't go look for something which is not here. It's not helpful, not needed. But do meet what is present. And sometimes there are quite a number of layers to really know and have a full unfoldment of what it is that is present. And it's a process. It's one moment I'll see, one moment I won't be clear. But no doubt, we walk in on the path which definitely opens us up and gives us the possibility, the potential of a greater allowance, and then hopefully a greater acceptance. Not forced, but coming from a natural, organic process of just being with what is. So what grows? Well, trust grows, acceptance grows, patience grows, and it deepens our clear seeing. And this is how we walk then on a path where definitely, even if it's small steps, there's a real sense that we are moving in the direction of a greater liberation. And liberation meaning here more peace and more lightness, actually. More lightness of mind and heart. Less weight. And this is what is called understanding. So I close with the same line that I closed for those people who were here over the weekend, but I think it's quite a valid definition of what mindfulness is, and it comes from Sylvia Burstein's line, just so that we have a sense of what it is that we call mindfulness. Mindfulness is the aware, balanced acceptance of the present experience. It isn't more complicated than that. It is opening to or receiving the present moment pleasant or unpleasant, just as it is, without either clinging to or rejecting it. This is the work that we're doing. And I'll just read it once again quickly. Mindfulness is the aware, balanced acceptance of the present experience. It isn't more complicated than that. It is opening to or receiving the present moment, pleasant or unpleasant, just as it is, without either clinging to, naturally the pleasant, or rejecting the unpleasant. So this is our work. It's easier said than done. But naturally, if there's a motivation, no doubt that mindfulness grows. So we'll sit just for a few seconds. Actually, we won't have another sitting tonight. We will be sitting just for a few minutes. And I think that for many of you, it's been a very long day of practice. Especially if we've begun this practice today. So it's not useful to just put many more hours or even few minutes. There's a way where we need to also relax the heart, relax the mind, and be in a very gentle relationship to ourselves. And so just to end, I'd like to have a moment of silence, just being. And having a moment of appreciation for all the efforts that we've been putting in today to be mindful, to be more aware, more present, to know the truth. Simple truth of what is causing more pain, and move in the direction of lessening this pain and eventually freeing ourselves completely from pain. It's a courageous endeavor, no doubt, to walk this path that goes against kind of the stream of the current. Meaning the habits of the mind. It's a very valuable journey. I'd just like to end tonight's talk with this poem, well-known poem by Rumi, that probably many of you have already heard, which is called The Guest House. This being human is a guest house. Every morning a new arrival, a joy, a depression, a meanness. Some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all. Even if they're a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house empty of its furniture, still treat each guest honorably. He may be clearing you out for some new delight. The dark thought, the shame, the malice, meet them at the door laughing and invite them in. Be grateful for whoever comes, because each has been sent as a guide from beyond. Wish you all a very sweet night, restful at least. And if you feel that you have energy, some of you have been here now for a few days, please do your personal practice. It's a special time to be on retreat. So if you have the energy, please continue on your own, and for the others, good night, and see you in the morning.